You are the man now. Dog, 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 you are the man now. Dog.
Okay. Hey there, everybody. This is Todd Theodore Padre. I'm, I guess, hijacking the airwaves here on the Man Dog Pod stream because my buddies Ryan and Dan, well, you know, they wanted me to have a voice. I'm sure everybody knows what's going on out there right now with me. But something's been happening in... I'm just going to get right into it. I'm hijacking the airwaves. You got Todd for about 30. You're welcome. And something's been happening in Hollywood here that I... It's troubling, and I'd like to address it because I've been a victim to it, I'll say. And it's these profiles on creative types, actors, mostly actors. Where they're tricked into discussing their creative process just so they can be, I guess, mocked in the media on the Twitter sphere and, you know, by the aggregators out there. It's not just the process. It's who they are. You know this about me and all actors. The whole thing we're doing out there is we're letting you into our souls. You know, and we're opening up, we're taking down the curtain, we're having a Jungian experience out there, we're showing you our shadow selves, you know, our grossest monsters, and we all have different ways to get there, and I guess I'll say Hacks at the New Yorker did a piece on the brilliant, challenging Jeremy Strong of Succession and his process, his method process, his history of working with such greats as Daniel Day-Lewis and Dustin Hoffman and learning from them and how he, you know, is his character on set. If he's going to be tired in a scene, he shows up tired. If he's going to be rude, he's rude to everybody on set. If he's happy, he's probably rude to everybody on set because he's so happy, you know. Then we get this profile in the New York mag. Are you sensing a theme here? These New York-related magazines... They're bringing down the creatives. They're bringing down the actors. They're bringing down the geniuses because they don't have anything better to talk about because they're, I don't know if it's COVID and they're not riding on their subways anymore. They got all this free time. You know, I don't know if it's COVID and they're not walking down their streets. They got all this free time. Maybe it's COVID and they can't go into 30 Rock anymore. And so they have all of this free time in New York City. And so they're take it down, creatives. Joss Whedon, of course, brilliant director. Avengers changed the game when it came to cinema. And it didn't make a ton of sense to me, but I'm a little older. But the kids loved it, and it changed the game. And it gave us, it laid the groundwork for Marvel films. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, just a piece of feminist genius. Joss Whedon brought us that. I never watched. I was a bigger fan of Angel. And the whole Boreanaz-verse. Love Angel, love Bones. And isn't that the way the world works? We're angels, but we're also bones. Something to think about. And we're also SEAL teams in one way or another. Boreanaz, let's just say he's telling the story. But, you know, this expose on Joss Whedon, where it's just him talking about himself. He thinks he's doing an interview. Then they print his words, and it makes him look like an idiot. You know, and people probably take it out of context. It makes him look rude. It makes him look pretentious. I relate to him. You know, he tells a story in there. The woman writing the article tells a little story about him and Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, having a little tete-a-tete and her thinking that he's rude and dismissive and him saying, hey, she just doesn't understand English. I was being smart. And I relate to that. I am frequently misunderstood by people who don't speak English and can't keep up with me. Even people who do speak English and can't keep up with me, they think I'm being dismissive or curt or cold. And so then, of course, I'm, of course, defending these artists that I respect. But because I have a dog in the fight. I have a dog in the damn fight. New York Loser does what I think is just going to be a profile on my work and on me and on Todd Padre, the artist, actor, feminist, director, writer, teacher, sandwich artist, chef, man, RD, some would say. Because I dabble in cooking, and cooking is an art. I cook for myself. I'll dabble because it's an art. It's a good time to just learn. And I did make myself a Chef Boyardee ravioli the other night because I know it's this COVID times when we have all this free time and you just have to start picking up hobbies. So I started buying these, all the different Chef Boyardees, the alphabet soup, the meat, the beef ravioli, the lasagna in a can, and I'm learning. Each time you make a new one, you learn. You know, I've got a sourdough. I've got a sourdough mother dough that I'm using to make my roommates not use the kitchen because it stinks so much and it takes up a lot of space. So that that's a nice way to hold a space a little bit. Where was I? Oh, just that I'm an artist in more ways than one. And so New York Loser does this piece on me. And this woman writes me a letter and says, hey, there's a lot of talk going on about the way you are with actors on set, the way your creative process, the way you get into character. And I just want to talk to you about it. And I'm thinking, what's more boring than an interview with me talking about my process? You know, sure, if the people want it, I'll do it. But hell, it is so boring. It's like, hell, if they want to hear it, I'll do it. So over the span of a month, we do some interviews. And, there are times when I'm thinking, oh, hell, this is a hit piece. But go ahead and hit me. I'm confident in myself. I don't think there's much you can hit me on. I am an open book. And then the piece comes out. And it's a hit piece. And it's a drag piece. And it's not the good kind of drag, not the fun kind. I wasn't lip syncing for my life. I felt like I was sinking in a pool of shit for my life. A drowning pool. Except this drowning pool, you know, was not a sickness I was down with. And so I'm sure you know what's in the article, and I'm sure you know some of the content, but I want to address some of the stuff in there and just defend myself a little bit. I think I have that right to defend myself a little bit when my character is assassinated, like, you know, the writer is John F. Hinckley and I'm John F. Kennedy. You know, it's an assassination. So I want to address some of it. All right, first, the first piece of information that we can speak to. When I am in character for a role, no matter what the role, I like to sleep. I don't know what to tell you. I don't like to be woken up. And so there's stuff in there. They interviewed every makeup artist I ever worked with. And frequently the makeup artist would say I would fall asleep in the makeup chair, even if it was a quick touch-up. And then there's this dig in there that was like, it's never a quick touch-up because he shows up incredibly blemished. That's a dig on my, I guess, skin care routine, which, you know, if you want me to get into it, I will. I have a great skincare routine, which I learned in France. And I rub truffle oil on my face before bed every night. And I take 6 baths a day. And I do bathe in 2-3 of the baths are pig baths. So I bathe in mud, which people do, and they do at the spa. So I just do it in my own backyard, which I have a leak, so I always have free mud, and it's of the earth, you know, and then I do the truffle oil at night. And then I do an avocado toast facial. So that's the tip of the tongue, the roof of the mouth, the lips, and the teeth. It's the Trader Joe's everything but the bagel seasoning. A mashed avocado, a lot of lemon, which keep that out of your eyes, and a Jewish rye bread. And I'll do one of those. And so, yeah, this is a skincare routine that has been shared with me by a lot of the greats. Clint Howard. Those weren't two separate people. It wasn't like Clint Eastwood, Howard Hughes. Though Howard Hughes shared with me a great urine storage technique that I use to this day. If I am on set and I am in some sort of huge costume that I can't get out of, something with a button fly or something like that, I'll use the Hughes technique, which is urinating in anything other than a toilet. But I digest. What I'm trying to say here is, so when I'm in the makeup chairs, I fall asleep quickly. And then if I'm woken up, I will become immediately curt. I will get, I will accuse whoever is doing my makeup of being my mother and waking me up too early for school. And that's I'm reenacting a trauma. You know, my mom always woke me up too early for school, and they have no respect for the trauma that we bring as actors. And I accept other people's traumas. That's the thing. I am an empath. Did they put that in the article? They put me saying it. They put me saying it, but you know what they put around it? The fact that I happened to, in that moment, be saying it in a bit of a road rage incident. Where I said, look, I'm usually an empath, but if this motherfucker cuts me off one more time, I'm going to rear end them. And then you can read the article for the specifics. I'll get into it again, but they basically got the story right. I tried to rear end this guy who cut me off, and I fully, because I do drive a bit of a small car, I drive a mini Fiat. It's a mix of the BMW Mini and the Fiat, and it is if you picture the car that the little apple that the worm rides in the busy world of Richard Scarry. I mean, you don't have to, you know, if you picture it, it's not a comparison. It is that car. I'm riding in that little apple that the worm from the busy world of Richard Scarry drives in, and so I'm in a little apple and. Big Apple, newspapers, bad. My little Apple car, energy efficient, delicious. So anyway, in this road rage incident, I get under the guy's car. I end up getting stuck underneath the car. And now myself and the journalist are kind of along for the ride for 3 hours. And I'm getting more and more furious. What we didn't know is this guy was going on a bit of a road trip. He was going to Palm Springs and got lost on the way. which is not my fault. He ends up realizing he's lost when he's in Riverside, which is, he was going the wrong way. He's going southwest-ish, and he needed to be going straight east. I was in Los Angeles for a job, by the way. They mentioned this in the article. I was preparing for an audition for the new season of Loki, the Marvel show Loki, with Tom Hiddleston. There is a new Loki that is called Shit Loki. And I was auditioning for that. I don't really understand this Marvel stuff. Like I was saying, it's from one of these many universes. And this one was the, like a universe, I guess, where they're all sick. All the Lokis are really sick. And so I totally fit the physical request for the character. And I was making myself sick all week to get into character. And so for this New York Loser magazine article, and by the way, they're the losers. Can I say that on the record? They make me look like a loser. They're the losers for even making them. Why make a magazine specifically about people who they're accusing of? If I'm the cover of your magazine and I am the centerfold, which I posed for, and they barely used any of that stuff, by the way, which I'll be suing for. I'll be suing them for this whole thing because I spent 4 days getting my centerfold body going, which is already hard because we had my sick body going for Loki. Anyway. Look, you watch Loki. You can see whoever they end up casting as shit guy, shit Loki, and see what you'll probably think he could look sicker. And if they make him look sick with all their CG crap and whatever, I looked sick in real life. Okay, the next accusation. I interrupt people in the middle of their takes repeatedly to do my own little improvs that I say I just thought of, but I wrote in advance, obviously. So that's an accusation I got from several people. I was cut out of Judd Apatow's This Is 40. I was cut out of Judd Apatow's The Knockup. I was cut out of a largely improvised new show that's coming out on the Disney Plus network that is this kind of live action version of what was that movie called? Inside Out, the movie based on the Eve 6 song. I'd swallow my pride, I would choke on my rinds. But the lack thereof would keep Bing Bong alive. I took that lyric that we all remember from the U6 song from the 90s, and they made the movie Inside Out, where Bing Bong dies. Spoiler alert, Richard Kind, who I base a lot of my complaining on, his characters. Anyway, I was in the live-action version that they were making of that for Disney Plus, and it's supposed to be heavily improvised, and it's all different parts of your psyche. And I was supposed to be the part of your psyche that's always dying, I guess, is what it was written into there. Like, it's always, like, at the edge. And they were saying, like, you know what? This part is not just dying, but it's, like, also an unaware of itself misogynist. So they were like, just talk. I was like, okay, I can improvise. I created this whole character. I made a little booklet. All the music he listens to. Spoiler alert, it's that band Måneskin on repeat. And so on set, you know, it's an improv show. So, you know, if you think of something funny in an improv show, you have to say it, no matter whose take it is, no matter if you're in the scene, no matter if you're on the call sheet that day. And so a lot of people who are involved in the show were accusing me of showing up on days I wasn't supposed to be there, days after I was apparently fired, which I dispute, and still doing what I was calling improvs, but they were accusing me of pre-writing just because I needed a piece of paper, sometimes my cell phone, and then they played this damned tape that they still had of me saying I had a big improv, and you can hear on the tape is what it sounds like, allegedly, I'll be suing them. What it sounds like is I say, hang on, I've got a funny improv for this. What is my phone password? Oh, shit. What is my phone password? I can improv without my phone password, but I would love to remember my phone password. 1122? No. 2233. And I go through every permutation on the thing, and I've lost my train of thought. The point being, I guess I prepare a few improvs, but Robin Williams used to steal bits from stand-ups and just write him a $10,000 check and say, thanks, sorry, I stole your bit. I mean, all of the Bicentennial Man stuff with the robot is like stolen from stuff that I would do around Robin. Which, Robin, rest in peace. I mean, Robin, he was just a delight. We never met each other, but I watched a lot of interviews with him, and I stole a lot of his material from his Inside the Actor's Studio that I would do before that show was super popular. I would do a lot of his Inside the Actor's Studio stuff. I also did a bit of a comics relief, but the way it kind of worked out, it was me and two other comedians, and what the relief... What people started accusing us of is saying that the relief was that the show was finally over. Rude? I don't know. Did we raise a lot of money for some important causes? Unfortunately, no. We ended up in the red. We ended up being owed a ton of money by what were the causes even? Oh, it's because I'm so empathetic to this stuff, these charity stuff. What were the causes? Save the children, maybe. Save the whales. Give the whales children. Is that one? There was Give the Whales Children. It was a charity where I thought maybe children I'd started myself. It was me. This was the 90s. This is a fun time. It was me. It was Reginald Vell Johnson. It was the guy that was kind of like Keanu Reeves that was on Step by Step that played like the friend. And it was a charity that we thought maybe that were so many orphans and there's so many whales. And whales are very smart. Maybe they could raise the children. And, you know, we did Blackfish. There was a whole part of Blackfish that was cut out, which I'll be suing them for, the movie about the orcas. We actually had tried to have these orcas raise children at SeaWorld. And the way it ended was pretty dark, but it was a very interesting, fascinating experience. So, my comics relief and my comics unleashed is what I was going to say, because we were unleashed on that day. We went for it. Nobody was safe. Clinton wasn't safe. Bush, Perot. We wouldn't touch Dole. We would not touch Dole, and I never will. I mean, I just don't go there. I won't touch Bob Dole. I don't think anyone should. I thought that the Dole stuff they did on SNL, Bob Dole in the real world, they did that sketch with Norm MacDonald, rest in peace, as Bob Dole. And it just, I didn't even get it. Why would Bob Dole be in the real world house? Why would they treat him so disrespectfully? I thought that stuff was really, really crude. I wouldn't touch Dole. Perot we'd do. Clinton we'd do. Monica, we would tear Monica to pieces in the comics relief. Trip was unsafe. Let's just say I did a bit of a Trip impression. The joke people made is you've been doing a Trip impression for years, which means I fall down a lot when I'm walking on stage. And it's funny, but it's rude. And I'll be suing. I'll be suing everyone who said that. So have I addressed some of the major stuff in the article? I want to get back to this type of journalism that's using someone else's success and their personality to get you shares so that everyone online can laugh at you. That sucks. That sucks to me. Because we work hard. We put our blood, sweat, and tears out there. And again, you can reference the article when I say blood, sweat, and tears. It's almost like I can't say anything because then the article comes up. But yes, in the article, they talk about how I try to, on shows where I cry, plays, get tears out any way possible. And that there is this, I guess, claim that I have that I'm relatively proud of, that I have never been able to cry on stage. There's never been a tear that has come out of me. When my characters have to cry, I do anything to get there. I will use smelling salts, which did not work. A lot of people remember that in my production of the Life and Death in Todd Padre, which was kind of my version of what Bob Fosse did with all that jazz, where he kind of imagined his own death at that. I heard. I didn't watch it. These old movies, I can't really understand. They're too. It looks weird. It's not for me. Too slow. But I'd heard about that. I was like, oh, I'll do that. So I did. You know, I did a play that was the Life and Death of Todd Padre. And the whole idea is I envision how I died, which was, of course, saving the earth from an evil force. From this planet of ex-wives. And so the whole play is this, you know, this ex-wife planet is coming to take over Earth and say, look, we see how much money you're actually making. Even though you claim you don't have a job, we see you making a ton of money. You've invested somehow incredibly well. You have to pay that in alimony. And Earth is saying, it's not on the books. Show me the taxes. And so it ends with I end up at the end of the play having to marry all the ex-wives to save Earth. And in the marriage, the stress of marrying all the ex-wives gives me a heart attack in the play. And as I'm having the heart attack, I'm crying. And even just talking about it almost gets me there. I'm crying and I'm dying. And a lot of the reviews, and this is mentioned in this New York Loser article, a lot of the reviews said that the scene didn't make a ton of sense because I was cutting a fresh onion on it. And people were kind of saying, he's cutting the fresh onion, obviously, to get the tears, and yet there's still no tears. And a lot of people in the audience, there was not a dry eye in the house, I'll tell you that much. And you know, here come the naysayers saying it's because you were cutting a huge onion, and when it didn't work on you, you kept cutting more and more onions. And the question became, where did he get all these onions? It looks like maybe from a Burger King. How did he get access to so many? Does he work at Burger King? All this horseshit. I've lost my train of thought again. Which is just what happens to you. I haven't slept a wink since this article came out. I mean, in a sense, I have. I've slept like 20 hours a day, but it's not restful sleep. I'll tell you that much. I'm tossing, I'm turning, I'm having these nightmares where everyone's laughing at me. And, you know, these things affect real people. And now here comes the issue where people say, well, what you did affects real people, as it's quoted in the article. You also called some, you know, you on the set of Don't Look Up, which I was used as a I was used as a hair reference for Jennifer Lawrence's character. Excuse me, I've had this awful cough recently. But anyway, instead of Don't Look Up, I got into an argument with Jennifer Lawrence, and I said, you wouldn't know a disaster movie if it bit you in the ass. And no wonder last name is Lawrence. And then there's a long pause, and everyone said he doesn't have a second half to this insult. He's thinking of one. And it's like, no wonder your name is Jennifer Lawrence. You can listen to the tape. You can read the interview. I don't buy that piece of garbage. But if you want to download it off of BearShare or wherever you get stuff, if you want to torrent the article from New York Loser Magazine, feel free. So a long pause. Says no one. I said, no wonder your last name is Lawrence, because you wouldn't know acting if you could pay your board rent. People laughed. People laughed with me, is my, I think. And people say, Todd, why would you do that? Don't you think you could have had a chance with Jennifer Lawrence? I'm not interested. I don't date actresses. I know some of the actors, that's what they're in it for, you know? It's not for me. And that's by my own choice. I do not date actresses. And I remember I worked with Jack Nicholson once. Jack Nicholson used me for a face reference for the Joker. See that? Because he said, I heard you have one of the most unnatural smiles around. And I said, thank you, Jack. And he said, tell me, Todd Padre, this is my Nicholson, which, you know, I don't even have to introduce it. Tell me, Todd Padre, you see all these beautiful actresses on set. You know, how do you, here's a piece of advice. That's how I'm getting at the story. I'm remembering Jack Nicholson gave me this piece of advice. Here's a piece of advice. They're all Johnny. And I was like, Jack, what are you talking about? And this was, you know, we'd been partying a little bit. I partied with Nicholson on the set. Keaton wouldn't talk to us. DeVito was around. This was before Returns, but DeVito was around. Body reference for me also as well. They kind of made the, this was a different point in my life. Obviously, I'm kind of sickly and thin now, but I used to have a penguin from Returns body. And DeVito was like, what trick do you use to get that black goop to come out of your mouth? And I said, that's not a trick. It's my saliva. I said, oh my gosh, what's wrong? And I said, I don't know. I grew up on one of those Brockovich Superfund sites. And so a lot of people think that maybe my saliva is black because it was kind of where the government buried all of their test nuclear, it's all this jibber jabber. I don't know. I grew up, you know, in New Mexico and the government, you know, sometimes the government would use, because I was in a tall bed. My parents had a really tall bed because I had bunk beds. But my dad always said, we're saving the bottom bunk just in case. I said, just in case what? He said, in case we make a better one. Better what? Bed? But so they would use the space underneath. My dad hired out the space that was underneath my bed for the government to put these toxic barrels. Oh, excuse me. Oh man, I've had this, my stomach has been crazy. I've been coughing like crazy. I don't know what's going on. It's the stress from this article. Anyway, I don't date actresses on set. That's why I'm okay being really mean to Jennifer Lawrence. And then people say, well, just because you're not trying to date an actress doesn't mean that means you have to be mean to them. That goes right over my head. But I just want to talk about the process, and not just the I don't want to talk about my process, but that's all I wanted that article to be, was my process. Give people a little window into why they can't do what I do. But instead, it was a takedown. It was a teardown. It was a ripdown. It was a smackdown for sure. Of course, there was the part of the article where I got smacked down by Dwayne The Rock Johnson because he walked in on me. I pretended to use his suit closet as my house for the article. There was an article about me. I knew where he lived. And I pretended to use his suit closet as my own house. And so that's why the first half of the article is like, apparently Todd lives in a room of clothes. And I said, no, these aren't just, it's not a room of clothes. It's my, because Dwayne Johnson's suit closet is bigger than my, every house I've ever lived in put together. And So Dwayne, I thought he was out of town shooting, I hope Ballers or whatever, Hobbs and Shaw. I hope him and Vin get back together. But I you know, I've been advising him in his sleep, because he would come home and sleep and I'd be in the closet. So I'd come and whisper in his ear. I'd say, come on, do Fast and the Furious 10. Your body on screen, Vin's body on screen is what the people want. It's these two hunks, hot, sexy. I mean, there's no more sexual energy than The Rock and Vin Diesel on screen. And I'd whisper this to him in his sleep to try to incept him. And you know, and then also, like, cast me in anything. Me being Todd Padre. You don't know who I am, but Google Todd Padre and then look up his reel at actorreels.ripoff and watch it and then cast him in something. Anyway, I don't know if it worked. I haven't gotten the call, but he walked in on us doing this hit piece in his closet, and I've lost my train of thought again, which is what keeps happening because I can't sleep because this article, some 20 hours a night. I guess what I just wanted to do here is open up a little bit about how hurt I am about the article, how much it's ruining my relationships, and I wish I would be seen as a little more human, because that's what we're trying to do, is create us. I'm just trying to create, you know, I'm trying to create reality where these people don't understand. Sorry. I wish I had some tissues here, because I'm crying. I'm going to have to end this. I'm too sad. Okay. That was really cathartic. A good cry. If I can recommend that to anybody, my guru talks about emotional release in meditation, and letting that be a space where you can feel your feelings so that you're not feeling them at people. You're feeling them on your own. You're not forcing other people to deal with your feelings that you haven't expressed, which I never do. Anyway, thanks to the Man Dog guys for letting me use this time and space. And I would say, have a little empathy for the guys out there trying to show you reality, trying to hold up a mirror. Here's a theory. Maybe that people are so mad about these guys because they're holding up a mirror. And people don't like what they're seeing in the mirror when they see these interviews. Something to think about. Maybe you should take a look in your own mirror instead of us being your mirror. We're just trying to be your mirror. So look in that mirror, pay for tickets to our plays and our movies, but also be your own mirror. And if you're just listening to this and you don't realize that I'm hammering this point home by looking very close to the camera and kind of bumping the mic, I think, so I hope it's not ruining the audio. But I'll fix that in the mix. But yeah, maybe look in your own mirror. Something to think about. All right, good night. And as they say, good luck. I turn this fucking thing off. How do you turn this thing off?